So I want to make a suggestion, and I want to just read something, finishing up what Gavin Harrison said, and then have a discussion. But to the degree that you're comfortable with each other, if you want to partake, is to find someone and just share with them your experience of that particular episode. What was that like? Were you able to open? Did it frustrate you, scare you? What's your window of tolerance for it? Did something shift when you recognized it and looked at it a little differently? And whatever it is, it's okay. There's no right, wrong. We're not judging, fixing, curing, healing. We're listening and sharing with each other the truth of our pain and our struggle, and just that particular way of exploring it, so you can share with someone what that was like. Were you aware of your window of tolerance of pushing it away, or it was okay, or how you responded to it? Was recognizing it easy but accepting it was difficult? What was your experience of that? Whatever it was is fine. We share it with someone. But I want to just read this to you. It is also important to have someone say, yes, this is terrible. And yes, I validate your experience. To unburden myself of the story and the drama and to continue the exploration in a meditative way. I can't imagine dealing with abuse and not having it acknowledged. Because the abuse leaves one so untrusting of oneself and so much in denial of the truth. There's something very important about being told that what is happening is okay and that you're not going crazy, that you're not on the edge of a nervous breakdown. So I was told by my teachers to go back and love with love to my cushion and just be with the truth of what's going on. He then goes on to talk about one of the most self-defeating attitudes that people who are sexually abused most often have is that they are to blame, that it was their fault and they have to deal with the consequences. Beyond any doubt, I know that the direction of happiness and freedom is the way of acceptance. And so I know that whatever it is that happened, the challenge for me is to open to it as it is, with much as acceptance as I can. After we share with each other, this is a book by Pema Chodron called When Things Fall Apart, Heart Advice for Difficult Times. And she talks about our Buddha nature. She talks about that in spite of what we may have all been through and struggled through, there is a part of us that is wise and compassionate and loving, that is who we are and our nature. And in a particular therapy, I'm not here to speak about that one per se, but in the context that all healing is self-healing, your relationship with yourself. In internal family systems therapy, the model is a simple one for healing and for trauma support, is to recognize that everyone has this Buddha nature and loving self. They don't call it Buddha nature because it's not a Buddhist practice, but it's very much the same thing. To come from a place of compassion and curiosity and courage and caring and clarity and connection as who you are, that will be there even if parts of you are scared and angry and hurt and abused and abandoned. And you connect with that part. And then you recognize the other parts, that we have what's called an exile. There are parts of us that have been carrying that pain because it goes somewhere, whether it's in our minds or our hearts or our bodies. When we get hurt, when we get abused, when we get abandoned, when we have trauma, If we don't process it, if it doesn't get resolved, if we don't get the support we need to work with it and cope with it in a healthy way, it lives in us and we carry it around with us until we face it and unburden it and let it go. We carry it around, pretty much. That's all of those books. The body bears the burden. The body keeps the score. The body remembers. Someday the body will present its bill. The research is overwhelming. And by the body, I mean body-mind, depression, anxiety, fear, all of that stuff that we go through. And so we have a part of us that's carrying that stuff. I'll read to you as well, Thich Nhat Hanh. If you send me your email, I'll send, when I get your email, I wanted to send you this article he wrote called Healing the Wounded Inner Child, which shows up for us in meditation practice also. That cry we hear is that scared little girl of healing the wounded inner child. And for me, it was really wonderful that the Buddhist teachers are acknowledging that trauma, because for many years in our practices, we didn't talk about this. We just sat. Nobody said, wait a minute, I'm in meditation because I was abused and traumatized. Nobody told me about a window of tolerance or pain to rain or any tools to be with it. It would just sit, so I just didn't even know what I was doing or being other than the practice in a certain sense. So we're just bringing awareness to that. And in IFS language, it's called the exile. It's called a part of us that is carrying the burden of the shame, of the anger, of the grief, of the pain, of the terror, of whatever we live through as children or in our life. I had a patient recently who lived through the death of their spouse, which is the number one stressor in a person's life that will predict illness later on if they don't process the grief. In this case, this person had a husband, the only man she'd ever been with. They'd been together for 50 years. He had a stroke, he got Parkinson's, he developed Alzheimer's, and she was his caregiver for 10 years. And then she had to make a choice to pull the plug. She had it. And her children, the doctors, everybody knew it was the right thing, but it's not an easy thing to do. And she had to go home to this big house by herself for the first time in her life. And she was a strong, wise, compassionate woman, but had never gone through that. And when she came to see me, she had suffered from depression for many years. She was on drugs, she had arthritis acted up, and had all these symptoms. And I just said, tell me your story, what was happening in your life when all of this developed. We weren't even talking about her childhood. We were just like, tell me about your life. And she said something, she says, I told myself I'm not going to fall apart like all my friends did when their husband died. The 5 years after doctors and treatments and depression and all of that, and she said, can you help me? And she was pretty much, you know, hard advice for difficult times. Things had fallen apart pretty heavily. I didn't have an answer. I mean, I could give her herbs and remedies and things like that. But it was obvious to me. I said, did you grieve? Did you face the death of your husband and 10 years of the trauma, post-traumatic stress of being a caregiver, big stress, taking care of and death of a spouse is the number one predictor of the home scale, the number one stress, added to a whole host of other stresses, being alone, and she had tremendous guilt. There was no abuse, there was no horrible anything, this was someone that she loved, this was just life happening. And I said, I can help you be with it. I can help you be with your grief, your sadness, your guilt, your shame, whatever she carried, even though it wasn't necessarily, I mean, it was connected to childhood stuff too, but that was what was going on in her body, her body-mind. And she hadn't addressed it. She wrote a poem, because I encouraged her to share her experience as she looked back on what was the most difficult time for her, and it was when she went home for the first time, and he had passed away, and she had pulled the plug. And, you know, this big empty house, and now she's all alone. And in retrospect, she wrote a poem about that. And it's called 3 AM. Now, this wasn't horrible abuse. It wasn't trauma, but this was trauma for her. And she wrote this poem. 3 AM, she called it. Who's going to open the peanut butter jar? Who's going to take out the blue box? Water the favorite plants? Find my eyeglasses? And who's going to keep me breathing? Who's going to tell me I'm lovely and I don't look fat? Remind me to wear bright colors. Take my arm to the dining room table and teach me how to breathe. Who's going to give me courage to walk into a party alone and to walk out alone? Forgive me for what I did. To play God. To tell God you're ready to leave while I'm taking sips of breath. Tell me I did the right thing. Tell me I was brave. I share that because she was really in a lot of pain, emotional pain, physical pain. An elderly, frail woman at the time. But she had incredible courage in the sense that I said, I can help you if you're willing to open to whatever the truth is about your husband's passing and your grief and your guilt and however you feel about that. And she was able to do that. So what I'm sharing with you is not so much an answer to your question. Yes, I know for me, and yes, I know from books and from training, but I'm sharing with you from patients that I've learned from who've had more courage than me to face their stuff when I was scared to death because I didn't know what to do. I didn't have an answer. I mean, the best answer I have is what I'm trying to teach you today, to trust your own beingness and mindfulness. Because I think sometimes in the effort to figure out what to do, we can miss the opportunity to just be with the rawness of it in ways that we might be able to do it, but we don't believe we can. So I, as much as I want to have answers for people and tell them what to do, I find that if I create a space for them to open to their own truth and find it, that's how they'll learn. I started out, I didn't tell you, I'll tell it to you later because I want you to connect with each other. But I began my career as a Montessori teacher. So what I learned there was that learning is natural. You don't have to teach a child how to read. They can learn how to read. If you create an environment for reading, they'll read. And then I became a yoga teacher. And this was in the 70s. And they didn't have holistic in those days, or healing, or an integrative, or any of that stuff, or mind-body. So people were looking for other choices, which was good because yoga is a complete system of self-healing. The asanas, the breathing, the meditation, the diet, it's really a process of transformation. So it's how I began my journey of healing. After my father died, I found yoga for me personally. And that's what motivated me to become a doctor, because I saw people heal themselves in what might be miracles, because I was just teaching yoga, but they were curing themselves of all their diseases because their consciousness was changing and their diet was changing and their lifestyle and attitudes and beliefs were changing. And I said, oh my God. And I'll tell you more later. But in any event, the healing comes from inside of each of us, and we have all the tools that we need if we create the space. And I'm trying to encourage you and empower you to trust that. part of you can be brought to the part of you that's hurting, that's wounded, that's carrying the wound. One other part of IFS, and we have managers that keep us from ever letting ourselves feel that stuff. Internal family systems therapy. And when I studied it with Dick Schwartz, who's the main guy, it's like I had already been doing most of it, but never had it organized in that way. And that's what I'm saying. Everybody's doing the same thing, but we're calling it something different. We have to connect with our inner truth. We have to be self-aware and self-compassionate. We have to be willing to touch the parts of us that are scared and et cetera. We have to see it as an opportunity. And so we have another part of us that's called an exile. Remember when I said, Jung said, all neuroses is a substitute for legitimate suffering? What do you think an addiction is? I can't feel this, so give me a drink. I can't feel that, so I'll eat this. I can't feel this, so I'll be codependent. I can't. So all of our addictions and compulsions are just a way not to feel something, and they keep us safe. They make us sick. They cause us our suffering. But they're another part of how we work to keep us from facing that difficulty. Okay. So, enough of me at the moment. What I'd like you to do, if you're comfortable, and the exercise is really one of knowing that we're all in it together and to be present as much for the other person as that person sharing with you their story. And this isn't to tell you this, to tell you your story. I want you to share, you know, some edge of where you've shifted or what you've learned or how you can be with your story in a different way from what we've talked about, pain to rain, compassion, mindfulness in some way. But use the pain to rain exercise to share what your experience was. Take a few minutes and just say, well, my pain was I have all this grief. And I recognized it and I accepted it, but it's all in my head and I was scared. Whatever, who knows what will come up. And just share with them your pain to rain experience. And the other person is listening. You're not saying a word except being present and saying, I hear you, I see you, I care, you're not alone. And we're just recognizing that we're kind of all in it together. Okay? This is in the context of what he said, that we're all here, and yes, we all know that we have wounds and stuff. It's helpful to have somebody sit and listen to you and say, I hear you. You know? And I'll tell you one more little thing that happened for me. There's a guy named Sam Keen. You remember hear his name, anybody? So I did a lot of studying and learning at Omega Institute back in the 70s and 80s. You've heard of Omega. I've taught there several times. And I took a workshop with Sam Keen. And it was actually on questions. It was actually on living questions, which is where one of the ways I got my living questions idea from. And I would sit in the front row and I would ask a lot of questions. And at one point during the weekend, in the first day, he wouldn't call on me again. And there was a part of me that was getting really pissed and reacting to it. Because I'm not shy and I was, you know, I had a lot of questions and blah, blah, blah. And I could see him look, and he'd look at me and then call on this person. Then he'd look at me and call on that person. And then he'd look at me and nobody else was raising a hand, but he wouldn't call on me. So by the end of the first day, I was really pushed some of my buttons. Still have a lot, but I had more in those days. And I was really angry and hurt and frustrated. And I remember going up to him afterwards and said, don't you like naturopathic students? I was asking you these questions, you know, whatever. And I said to him the following. This is an important idea. I said, I feel as if you're invalidating me. We use the word validation. We all need to be validated, acknowledged. We need to acknowledge ourselves too. And I said, I think you're invalidating me. Because I'm raising my hand. You're not calling on me. Don't I exist? It was pushing my childhood buttons of, you know, me screaming, everybody, there's something wrong with daddy, but nobody's seeing it. Nobody's doing anything about it, right? The whole story. So he looked at me and he came like this and like this. And he said,
No one can invalidate you. Go sit and meditate on all the ways you have felt invalidated. Go sit, you know, there's a meditation hall there. I wanted to punch him in the nose. I walked out and I said, that's it, I'm out of here, I'm getting a refund, screw this guy. And then I said to myself, well, you're here, you might as well listen to him. He came to his workshop and he's giving you a suggestion of what to do. And I was really, you know, activated, buttons were pushed, and I did what he said. And I went and I sat in meditation and I just said, invalidate, invalidate, invalidate. And invalidate became invalid. Interesting, it's the same word. But that was the first time in my life I felt my shame. The first time I felt this place in me that I'm not okay. And that's why, please see me, that wound. Because one of the wounds we all carry from abuse, from abandonment, is how we beat ourselves up, how we judge ourselves, and how we shame ourselves that there's something wrong with us. Because that's how you feel. That's what you think. And that's what you tell yourselves. And guess what heals toxic shame? Mindful empathy. Self-love, self-compassion, touching it with the part of us that has the capacity to be mindful. So it was really painful, but it was really healing to touch that wound in me. And it was really interesting because the next day I raised my hand and he didn't call on me, but it didn't bother me. Somehow I had shifted a little bit in needing that validation in some way, and my button didn't get pushed. Okay, do you have any questions about what I'm asking you to do? And if you don't want to participate, that's fine too. Just sit and be and write and reflect. But I want to recommend that you do that. And just take 5 minutes. Don't tell them, this is not to tell your whole story. This is just to share your experience and to practice just listening and acknowledging, you know, we're all in it together. I care. Practice your own presence. Practice compassion. Practice all of those qualities. Okay, everybody understand what I'm asking for? I know you had a question before. Can you hold it till later? Okay. Okay? And in the meantime, you know, take a little break. And it's 4 o'clock. Let's finish up your break and 5 minutes with each other. At 4:20, we'll resume. Okay? Find somebody to sit with and chat and listen to each other for 5 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.